From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Gaudette. It's Idaho Matters. In a surprise move yesterday, the FDA put the brakes on a new drug that was supposed to help take the place of EpiPens to treat anaphylactic shock. Plus, a nasty new virus is making the rounds in India. It's Wednesday, time for our Doctor's Roundtable with Dr. David Pate. He's the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. He's a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email. It's idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, hello. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Samantha?
I'm hanging in there. Tell me about Neffy. That's this drug that was, well, supposed to be an alternative to EpiPens.
Right. I suspect most listeners are familiar with the EpiPen, that particularly those that have children that are prone to really severe allergic reactions, probably commonly like peanuts, where they carry this injectable epinephrine. And so it's called an EpiPen, because it looks like a pen. You can take off the cover and then it has a needle on it and you inject it. Well, it's a wonderful drug and life-saving because you do have to act within minutes. But the fact that it's an injection can make a lot of people uncomfortable. And of course, a lot of parents don't want to give their kids shots and so forth, and it can be inconvenient. So they came up with this new formulation, Neffy, which is a nasal inhaler. And we went through the same thing with naloxone, which we give, or Narcan, which we give for people that have overdoses, where before all we had was an injectable. And so that limited, because it's a little awkward, especially if you're not familiar with how to use it. And we came up with a nasal spray that's really effective and very convenient and very easy to use. Well, that's what they did for this condition. They came up with a nasal spray of the epinephrine. And as you said, it was submitted for approval previously. And the FDA's vaccine committee that reviews these things looked at it. And of course, one would predict it would work well because you're nasal lining, the so-called nasal mucosa, is really good at absorbing drugs. And that's why we do have a lot of nasal sprays that we use. But they voted on it, and they did vote to recommend it. And it's very unusual that the FDA doesn't accept the recommendation of that committee. But in retrospect, although it did surprise a lot of people, it might not have been quite so surprising. And the reason was, even back then, the vote, there were still five or six people that voted against it. And the reason was, is that while this was tested in, there's no concern about the safety. It's clear that it's safe. The question was about its effectiveness. Is it equally as effective as giving that shot? Because here, you're dealing with a life-threatening situation, usually in kids, not always, but you want to make sure that it's going to work. And the problem was it had not been tested in children having this kind of a reaction. And so I am actually not all that shocked that the FDA said, no, we want a study done in humans when they are suffering. Now, you know, it makes it awkward because you don't want to mess around when somebody's having a life-threatening reaction. So the FDA said that they could do the studies just in people that were having, you know, severe nasal congestion and runny nose and sneezing and those kinds of things, and check it that way. Because people had objected, well, wait, we don't want to do a test where we test this nasal spray versus a placebo, something that doesn't have any effect because the person's having an anaphylactic reaction. So that's why there was so much resistance to do the study. But now the FDA said you can do it in these situations and you can compare it to using the EpiPen and see how it works. So I think that's a good outcome. I hope it won't take a very long time to get that data. I think most of us expect maybe by the beginning of 24, it could be approved. And that will be good. And parents will want the assurance of knowing that that nasal spray is going to be an option and it will work for their kids, because not working would be a big problem.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I understand not wanting to give kids anaphylactic shock just to test the medication. That's I can understand that. Well, I've known people who have had EpiPens because of maybe allergies to bees or bee stings or other things like that. And I know this was billed as kind of an alternative, especially for people who are adverse to needles. They're afraid of needles. And we've run into this before with some of the COVID shots, where we heard from people who simply would not get the COVID shot because they couldn't handle getting a shot.
Well, you're right. And it, you know, there's a lot of people that are very afraid of needles. So there's that issue. There's just the issue that giving an injection is more complicated than giving a nasal spray. And in fact, if you look at the problem that we've had with controlling polio, the problem has been that the injectable vaccine works the best, and we use it here in the United States, but in some countries where it's very difficult to have trained healthcare providers who can give these injections, they've relied on the oral polio vaccine. We stopped using the oral vaccine way long ago because you can get polio from that vaccine. Well, actually, the person getting the vaccine doesn't get it, but they can convert the vaccine virus in their gut to the form that can cause polio, and then they can transmit it to somebody else. We think that's how the really tragic case of the young man in New York City got poliomyelitis and became paralyzed was because somebody had gotten that oral vaccine, so it would have likely been an international traveler, and then passed it in their stool and infected this person who was not vaccinated, and he got polio. So yes, we have recurrently seen problems when our only option is an injectable option, both the willingness of people to get it, but also the ability of people to be trained or that are qualified to give the injections.
Well, you brought up polio. We have talked a lot about viruses around the globe and different viruses, not just COVID, but other ones out there. So let's talk about another one. And I'm not sure I'm saying this right. Nipah?
Nope, you did it right the first time.
Nipah. The Nipah virus. Yes. This is in India. It's another one we, in the States anyway, haven't heard much about. Tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, so Nipah is another virus that is a zoonotic infection. Your long-term listeners will recall that zoonotic infections are ones that the natural hosts are in animals, and then it's an animal that incidentally infects humans. And so this is a zoonotic virus. It actually comes from fruit bats, or flying foxes, as sometimes they're called. And this virus is a newcomer on the stage. At least we didn't recognize it until 1999, which is really very recent in the scheme of identifying viruses. And when it was first identified, what happened was that it was in Malaysia, if I recall correctly, and there was a pig farm right next to an orchard. And the problem is, what happens is these bats have the virus. They pass the virus both in their guano, but also in their saliva. And what do fruit bats do? They eat fruit. And with the orchard right next to the pig farm, what happened is that the bats nibble on the fruit, and they leave saliva on it. And that fruit will then sometimes drop down from the trees. And so then animals can eat it and they can become infected that way. The other thing is with this, we think sometimes the bats get into the water that is out in the open for the pigs to drink from. And so that could be a way. And also another way it's transmitted is there are date palm trees that people in certain countries like that sap to eat. And the problem is if you take the sap directly from the tree and eat it without boiling it, then it may already be contaminated by either the bat's urine or guano, and then you can get infected that way. So that was the first outbreak. And we've had numerous outbreaks since that first one. And the problem is what happened is in that first one, the pigs transmitted it to the pig farmers. And in that particular outbreak, it killed about 40% of the humans that got infected. Wow. And it can be transmitted from human to human, especially if you're in close contact with the person. We mostly see that in households and in healthcare settings where healthcare providers are not using proper infection control measures like masks and gloves. And so that's usually because this virus is not hugely transmissible. You have to kind of be in close contact generally to get infected from another person. But since then, we've had more outbreaks. What's concerning is that now there are two strains. So there's that initial strain that we just talked about that started in Malaysia called the Malaysian strain. But there's another strain of this virus called the Bangladesh strain. And it appears to be more severe. And that is the one that's circulating in India. And it has, in an outbreak that occurred in 2018, it killed 94% of the people it infected.
Oh, my God.
So generally, we see mortality rates with this infection anywhere between about 40 and 80%. So it's a very, very serious virus. I think right now, the concern is not for people here in the United States, unless you're traveling to India, or although we have had an outbreak in the Philippines, and that was actually transmitted from bats to horses, and then people were getting infected.
Wow. All right. Well, all the more reason to keep talking about viruses and global viruses, and it's just scary stuff. Okay, we've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a COVID-19 question or any other public health questions, send it to us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. We'll ask Dr. Pate next week. And Dr. Pate, I know we've got coming up in a couple weeks, we're going to do a little special on World Polio Day to talk about polio and the resurgence. So we look forward to that. And as always, we thank Excellent. You so much.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thanks, Samantha.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.